The trial of four former U.S. security contractors in the deaths of Iraqi civilians is just getting underway. Now, the former Blackwater employees allegedly opened fire at a busy Baghdad intersection in 2007. Now, 7 years later, prosecutors are sorting out if they can be held criminally responsible. In this week's Legal Loop segment, we examine why the case has taken so long to go to trial. Employment attorney Deborah Roth says it's the American judicial process.
Started in federal district court with indictments brought against six of the Blackwater contractors, and these former Blackwater contractors. They challenged the indictment on grounds of whether the evidence that was collected was tainted, which we can get into later, and they succeeded in district court and got the indictments thrown out. Well, the government appealed, and that appeal process all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court rejected hearing the case. It takes time, so you watch that play out. So the incident occurred in September 2007. Criminal charges were brought in 2008. Sometime in 2009, the federal district court, the lower court, threw out the indictment. It went on appeal to the Court of Appeals, the D.C. Circuit, U.S. Court of Appeals in D.C., and they reversed the district court in 2011 in favor of the government, reinstating the indictment, and then the defendants appealed to the Supreme Court. So you're just watching how long it takes for a case to go all the way to the Supreme Court.
They do say that the hands of justice move slowly, right?
And you know, it feels like, having practiced law now for over 20 years, it feels like, and I don't, you know, I'm just telling you how it feels. It just feels like it's moving even slower, that things take more time. Is that because the areas of the law get more complicated? Is that because the judicial system is clogged with too many cases? Is that because the courts are understaffed? You know, you don't know. But if the indictment was brought in 2008 and it finally makes it back down to the district court to retry in 2014, that's 6 years. And, you know, it's 6 years from the indictment. It's 7 years, almost 7 years from the incident. It's difficult to try a case 7 years later and, you know, be concerned about the viability of your evidence from 7 years ago.
I can imagine also, given the circumstances in Iraq, that it's hard to collect the evidence. But I want to actually ask you if there are certain implications or perhaps reasons for the delays or complications in the case, because these Blackwater guards were, in fact, hired by the State Department. They were contractors for the federal government. Did that give them any sort of extra level of protection?
You know, it did. And that's exactly why the case traveled all the way up to the Supreme Court and back down, because after the incident, they were treated like employees of the State Department, not non-employees. And employees of the U.S. government, when they're ordered to provide information, a statement to investigators, that information is immunized. And what that means is it can't be used against you in a criminal case. And only federal employees have that protection. So they can be ordered to provide information to the U.S. government. You, as a non-federal employee, private citizen, the U.S. government can't order you to testify against yourself, but they can to their own employees. And when they do, they're immunized.
Well, is that the same as saying that I could, in that case, say that I have a Fifth Amendment right to stay silent, but a federal employee in that situation does not?
Correct.
Oh.
And that rule of law applies throughout the federal government and is exercised regularly by the inspector general offices who conduct criminal investigations of federal employees. So if it's determined, you know, we don't want to prosecute you for this allegation of time and attendance fraud because the dollar amount at issue is too insignificant to get a federal prosecutor to take all this time and effort to prosecute you, we still can investigate you as the inspector general, and we can order you to explain to us and talk to us and provide information, and you have to or you will be fired. And that's the compulsion against your Fifth Amendment privilege. So once you are compelled to testify against yourself, which only a federal employee can be, you have to be a federal employee, then you have no Fifth Amendment right. But on the other hand, the beauty is they can't use that testimony against you in a criminal case. So where you always want to be as a federal employee, which is where these Blackwater contractors were, whereas they were ordered to provide information about what happened on that day in the square. When they were ordered to do that by the U.S. government, then that testimony is immunized. You didn't have a Fifth Amendment right to silence, and so what you said to the U.S. government couldn't be used against you in a criminal case. So they were treated like federal employees for purposes of the Fifth Amendment, which is a very big deal, as you've spotted. And the question then became, because there were many statements taken, while the government was prosecuting, investigating and prosecuting, and then brought in indictments, charges, criminal charges against these individuals, did the information they acquired in these statements, were they indeed used as the basis for the prosecution? Because if they were, that goes against this concept that once the government orders you to testify, they cannot use that information against you in a criminal proceeding. And so in the district court level, the district court judge found wholesale that the prosecutorial team misused these immunized statements to collect other evidence to bring the charges and throughout the indictment. At the court of appeals level, the court of appeals reversed and said, you know what, it was too broad brush. The judge should have gone through every piece of evidence that the prosecution wanted to introduce, line by line, that's a quote from the case, line by line, to determine, was it the fruit of immunized testimony? Because if it was the fruit of immunized testimony, you throw that piece out. If the government could prove that they got it independent of this immunized testimony from these Blackwater guards, then it could get introduced. And so went back down to the district court level. The government put in a new prosecutorial team that had never seen any of these statements. And, of course, all that happened quietly behind the scenes. And as soon as it was ready for trial, that's, of course, when it made the news. But the government was able to get enough evidence independent of these statements to bring new indictments.
Yeah. We're speaking with Deborah Roth, and she's an attorney with the law firm Shaw, Bransford and Roth. So already, even though the trial itself has just begun, there are lessons to learn for both those working on behalf of the U.S. government, such as prosecutors and investigators, and contractors working for the federal government, don't you think?
Oh, there are many lessons. Do I think going forward, I at the time, I remember when it first came out that the prosecutors were using, back in 2008, 2009, were using these immunized statements. And I remember, based upon my own practice of law representing federal employees who regularly are ordered, get a written order from the U.S. government, from the IGs, to answer questions. It's a grant of immunity. It feels like a very onerous use of power, but behind that use of power is immunization, is immunity, and everybody wants immunity from prosecution. And I remember thinking that the State Department investigators, diplomatic security, must have not realized that they read these guys that warning that should have been given to federal employees. Contractors aren't entitled to that grant of immunity. So I suspect government-wide, people now realize, contractors are not federal employees, so they're not subject to these laws. And they can be prosecuted like the regular citizen and be treated like a regular citizen. They would have had Fifth Amendment rights. And so certainly you can imagine that the lesson learned across government was when things like that happen with your contractors, and in the course of performing the job they were hired to do for the federal government, if there's an allegation they committed a crime, how are you going to treat them? You're going to treat them like a federal employee? Or are you going to treat them like a private citizen? So clearly there's that lesson. For prosecutors, this is a very unusual exercise. Ordinarily, when prosecutors have immunized statements from the person they want to prosecute, it is so difficult to collect independent evidence free from the immunized testimony. testimony, that they ordinarily don't pursue a prosecution. So you can see how important this case is to the Department of Justice to go forward with prosecution, because they've put an enormous amount of effort into collecting independent evidence.
Yeah. And just a final question, even though we're short on time, the lawyers for the defendants, as part of their defense, are saying that their clients had a state of mind in a war zone. Mm-hmm. What is that defense? What does that let you do that you wouldn't do in, say, you know, the suburbs of Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, well, their defense is self-defense. And so the question is whether or not they're legally going to be able to prove to a jury the defense of self-defense, self-defense to a manslaughter charge. To a manslaughter charge, self-defense is a defense that would, if the jury accepts, you know, appropriate quantum of evidence to prove self-defense, then you cannot be convicted on a manslaughter charge. And so what they're saying is, subjectively, they believed that they were under fire, and their subjective belief was based upon being in, you know, because remember that was during the hot war in Baghdad, and their subjective belief was colored by being in a war zone. And they also have to prove that objectively, an objective bystander taking into account all of the circumstances that they were under, which includes being in a war zone, that objectively it was reasonable for them to believe that they were under fire and that they had to use force to defend themselves.